Good evening. This is Paul Kelly. I am your host today on Speak Up Arkansas, reminding you that the mission of KABF is to inform, empower, and engage our listening audience to take action that serves the immediate needs of the common good of our diverse community here in Arkansas. Speak Up Arkansas is a place to learn about and share experiences of people impacted by the policies, practice, and programs enacted by our elected officials and implemented by public officials, and deciding whether they have a positive or negative effect on our lives. It could not be a better time to be holding our political leaders accountable for what they are doing to and for all of those, particularly those overlooked by the broader community. We hope to help you today to understand and take action when you feel inclined to do so. Our topic today is what I'm calling Vote Plus One. We know how important it is to vote. That is the most common method for all of us to be involved in our political process. But today we're going to talk not just about voting and maybe how to improve that, but we're going to be talking also about what we can do besides just voting, because it doesn't just happen every 2 years or every 4 years. It happens every day of the week. So we're going to start off today's show, I guess, with a well, first let me introduce the guests for today's show. I have Chris Burke, who's an attorney and legal counsel for the Democratic Party of Arkansas. I have Sarah Scanlon, who is with the Indivisible of Central Arkansas. We have Ellie Wheeler, who's a senior policy analyst at Arkansas Advocates, and we're soon to have Representative Charles Blake from District 36 in Pulaski County, Arkansas. He called us and says he's in traffic, so we'll get to him when he gets here. So, but first, I wanted to ask, you know, we'd like to talk a little about the legislative session this week and maybe highlight something. Things that you think are important. I know I was very pleased with the fact that the Senate passed the legislation that would stop and eliminate life without parole for minors, and also set into place a process for resentencing the more than 100 individuals at the Department of Corrections who are serving time, life without parole, for an offense they committed as a minor. So that's not only in line with the findings of the Supreme Court, but it's also what's good and I think correct and what is making our justice system a little more humane and reasonable. But anybody else have something? Ellie, I know, do you have, I know you have some things you may be looking at.
Yeah, this week, a bill that we thought was going to be dead that has to do with accessing your SNAP or what's formerly known as food stamp benefits is back now with an amendment that makes it even worse than it was before. The amendment now, in addition to restricting what types of food SNAP recipients can buy, the amendment would also require an ID to go along with your EBT card when you're making SNAP purchases. So that amendment passed yesterday in committee, and we're certainly keeping an eye on that because it does threaten low-income families' ability to use that very important program.
Ellie, do you think this is a negotiated response that Representative Bentley has come up with, or do you think that this is just, I mean, why would you bring that up and make it definitely worse?
I'm really not sure. The bill originally faced opposition from so many different groups, from hunger groups, from health policy groups, from grocers and local businesses were against this bill. I think that the photo ID requirement is maybe some kind of attempt to put it under a fraud prevention angle, but really, you know, they've tried that in other states, and it just doesn't work. It only places a greater burden on those grocers, and federal guidelines say you've got to treat EBT card is the same as every other card. So if you require ID for SNAP users, you've got to require it for everybody else too. And that means say goodbye to your self-checkout lines. Grocers aren't going to like that. And I don't know. I'm not really sure what the reasoning is behind that, but we're certainly going to keep an eye on it.
Well, Ellie, this is Chris. Thanks so much. And we've got Representative Blake here. Let me first say, I think that's great that the work that you do in tracking the policy, and Paul, as a longtime advocate for juvenile justice, you've done such great work. And, you know, Representative Blake has been engaged on this issue and been a leader on a lot of issues. But I think the thread between the issue with cutting off SNAP benefits or Arkansas being delayed in juvenile justice, or even Representative Blake with your automatic voter registration not getting out of committee today, the thread that combines all of those are an ideology and a view of people that's less than reality. I think if you view people as being on welfare and not working, or people that aren't engaged in their community, that they're just living off of other people, or, you know, they're not responsible, they shouldn't get to vote, or, they're bad people. You know, if you have that view, that ideology, then you're going to get this bad policy. But I think, you know, Representative Blake can tell us that's not the real world. People are out there working hard. They're struggling to make ends meet. People as juveniles aren't adults. You know, when you're on SNAP, you're not taking advantage of the program. You need it.
And I think one of this is Representative Charles Blake. I think one of the most dangerous things that happens in our chamber and our state legislators is that they have this visual image of people who are on SNAP, or of people who aren't engaged. And so many of them believe that image doesn't look like them. And they are putting what's the right word? They are associating unengaged voters. They're associating people on welfare with somebody that's not from their district, somebody that's not from their community. And that's extremely dangerous, because what you're doing now is you're making policy that affects others, and it's not personal anymore. So with the SNAP bill, you have everybody's against it. You have grocers saying it's going to cost them tens of millions of dollars to abide by the rules. You have families saying this money, nutritional value or not, it stretches out weekly, daily, because the stuff with no nutritional value is the cheaper stuff. It's the stuff that we can afford to feed. And it's so often that they have an image of a black welfare mother. And that's not reality. And until we have people who are going to come and say, I was on, Representative Lori Rushen, I can tell you, she stood up, she said, I was on welfare. Sometimes all we could feed our kid was macaroni cheese, box macaroni cheese. And I can tell you, my kids love box macaroni cheese.
My kid loves it.
Absolutely loves it. So that once you start putting a face on those circumstances, on these people, that is more reality, is people something that they can relate to, then we're going to continue to see this horde of poor ridden, bad intent policy.
So
I want to say I'm really glad to have such opinionated people around the table, and I knew this was going to happen because we don't have to. We just have to put something out there, and everybody starts biting on it. So we can handle that. I do want to focus, though, particularly at first, to address the issue about around voting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of legislation been proposed either to enhance or
restrict
the voting process, and I know that is, that's the first thing. That's the only way many people express and get involved politically. So I wanted to start out the show with that, because this is about focusing on the need for people to not only vote but do something and take action,
be engaged,
even if it's just one or two. So for every time you vote, you at least ought to do one thing. And that's sort of what's been circling around in my head. So let's talk about voting and what's going on in that arena right now. Chris, you want to start out first, and I want you to speak too some about the party. You represent the Democratic Party, and party politics is part of this, but just talk to us about that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. I am the general counsel for the Democratic Party, and I neglected to say something really nice about Sarah early, so sorry about that, Sarah. Sarah has been a longtime leader in progressive politics, a trainer that has trained other people and encouraged and trained me, so thank you, Sarah. Sorry I missed that earlier.
Now hurry up and talk, because I want to jump in. I'm biting at the bit.
But I just want to say two things, and Representative Blake has been a leader for a long time. I mean, he was the leader of our high school football team. He's led on these issues, and that leads me to my point that the Democratic Party is the party of the people. It's always been the party that's committed to your average Arkansan that's out there working hard, that wants to exercise their fundamental responsibilities. So it comes down to the question of, do you believe voting is a fundamental right, or do you believe it's a privilege? And so a lot of people out there, as Representative Blake was talking about, have this stereotype, this idea in their head of someone that's just not reality. So I think it's important to keep it in historical perspective too, Paul. We've progressed in voting rights. We've gone from just a few being able to vote to from landowning few to where we are today. And it's easy to regress. Progress isn't inevitable. So I think, you got to buy into the ideology that it's a fundamental right. You got to make progress. And we got to get past these stereotypes. But, I think, too, the historical context is something that maybe we're disconnected with in our time in Arkansas. Because, none of the four of us here really lived through some of the battles that got us to where we are today. And I'll just provide one quick example and then turn it over. But, people literally died for the right to vote, Paul. I mean, I watched this Selma movie this year with Jimmy Lee Jackson. They were on a march for voting rights, and he was literally shot, for the right to vote. So that's, somebody, younger than 40 may be disconnected from that. But that happened in your lifetime, Paul, and my parents' lifetime. I mean, this is a real thing.
Well, and not to just to piggyback on that, the women who actually fought for the right to vote in the Wilson administration chained themselves to the gates of the White House. They went to prison. They were force fed. They were punished for standing up and wanting the right to vote. I mean, so yes, all of these battles have taken place, and the reality is that what we've been disconnected from is the reality of how politics affects our daily lives. And when there are two reasons people don't vote. The first is people don't know how. And if they don't know how, they take the easy way out and they don't do it. The second is they don't see an impact on the issue or the candidate on their personal life, like how it affects them. And when we can actually take down the barriers to the process, educate people on how to vote, and then show them how the people in the legislative process, the city process, the school board process, set the policies that impact their everyday life, that's when people start actually moving.
Making politics personal. You're absolutely right.
Making politics personal, right? It's not just that it's all local. It is personal. Mm-hmm. And when people start seeing that and make those connections, then everything changes. In states like Colorado, where you do all the voting by mail, and whether you register to vote, you receive a ballot in the mail, carte blanche. I mean, there's no process. It's explained to you. Their voter turnout is 72% to 78%. In states like Arkansas, where we give no information about what is happening at the polls prior to going, that we don't make the process easy for folks. In fact, we try to make it harder. Our turnout is, anywhere from 40% in an off-year election to 52%. So you can see the vast difference of participation when you just look at process.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Sarah. It's not only people don't even know how to register. I was having people, and that's what my bill was about. I was having people call me in October when their kids were turning 18 years old and saying, okay, where do I go to get my kid to register? That shouldn't be the case in any state. You know, it's really disheartening when you have the Secretary of State office come to speak against automatic voter registration bill today, and say that they're afraid that if we have that there is maybe too many people registering that don't actually vote, and that could harm our voting rolls. That's their job. They're worried about the county clerk saying, well, we already deal with so many people who register that, and we get more that register, we just have more people that don't vote, and we'll have a diluted voting registration. That is embarrassing. Voting
is a
right.
God forbid.
Voting is a right, plain and simple. And we should not only, and that's, and this is a grand compromise. I'm going to talk about it in
okay,
a little
hang
while.
Hang on a second. I've got to get this call.
I'm going to talk about it in a little while, but...
Hello, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is Jim.
Yes.
I'm a conservative from North Little Rock.
All right.
I'd like to address the automatic voter registration roll.
All right.
And I'm personally against automatic voter registration. I believe that it is a responsibility of the voter to become informed to vote rather than to be a lemming led to the edge of the cliff and just said, well, you know, vote this way.
All right.
If our young people are not being instructed in school in their civics classes to know at what time and how and where to go for voter registration, then that's a failure of our schools. But it shouldn't just be a situation, well, hey, you got a driver's license, therefore you're a voter. Also, you should be a citizen to have a vote in our communities.
All right.
And sit back and listen to what y'all have to say about that.
I want to thank you for calling. I just before the show started got a call from somebody who said all this liberal politics we're talking about is the reason they want to do away with NPR. of course, I know there's a lot of, I think we try to do a balance. So I appreciate you calling, and
well,
I want
I'm
my listeners to be out there.
I am a KBS supporter.
Right.
Fantastic.
Right. Well, thank you.
Jim, was it Jim? Well, Jim, that's this the bill that I presented today, which HB 1004, actually, it is the title is automatic voter registration, but it's not a mandate. You only register if you wanted to. That's the process. We're not forcing anyone to. We're just making it easier. It says automatic because what we're doing is we're automatically updating your voter registration once you go to the DMV, once you go to the revenue office. If you need a new license, if you need a new ID, if you need to change your address, you will be asked three simple questions. Are you eligible to vote? Would you like to decline registration, and do you have a party? And that was as far and as extent as this bill goes. And the sad thing about it is that we have a lot of conservative politicians talking about the integrity of our voting system, the security of our voting system. How do we maintain? How do we update it? How do we scrub dead people off the list? And this bill actually did all of that. It makes sure that when you go in and you have a change of address, that your voting information is updated. It sets up a process where you are automatic, where the Office of Driver Services, which is the revenue office, when you go to the DMV, is actually sending your if you want to be registered, they automatically send it to the Secretary of State. Secretary of State sends it to the county clerk. There's no waiting period. That's the automatic about it. We're not forcing anyone to have to register. And then working with my Republican colleagues, some of them wanted to make sure that the same thing happens with the Office of Vital Records, that when someone dies, immediately gets taken off the roll. It's sent to the Secretary of State. Secretary of State's in the same process. And I'm not against that. If someone
Charles, remind me, your bill, I mean, it was very minimal cost.
$42,000 a year. That's why my Republican colleagues was against it, because it costs $42,000 a year. We're dealing with a $6 billion budget. And we have a piece of legislation that makes sure that takes care of two bases. One base says that our voting rolls and our voting registration system should be more secure. It should be more maintained. It should be more accurate. This bill did that. And then one says we should also expand the opportunity to vote to anyone that wants to and that is eligible. We are not, if right now to register to vote, all you need is a driver's license. So if you're going to get a driver's license, one, we make it easier for you to vote while you're getting that driver's license. So we're not trying to put a lot of people on the rolls that aren't registered to vote, that aren't eligible to vote. That's not the intent, and there's no way that can happen with this bill. But it's pretty disheartening that someone would be opposed to making it easier for people to register to vote.
Well, Charles, do you think the thread, you know, we talked about stereotype and, you know, where the policymakers come from, do you think that the fact that a lot of policymakers come from districts where there's a lot of people that may just think one way or may just look a certain way, do you think that impacts the policy? Because, you know, in this example, there may be a lot of representatives not from a very diverse district.
I would say yes, but the thing about this bill, I'm just giving you insight. I went through and talked to the 20 people on the committee. Most of them said, oh, this is a good bill. I have a problem with the title, okay, but this is actually a really, really good bill.
You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear us?
I sure can, and I just am really excited about this bill. You know, not participating in democracy is how you lose democracy. And if you are eligible to vote and you choose not to, then I think that it would be worth paying like a $25 fine every year for declining that offer. You know, and there would also, I mean, that's how it works. It's not, you know, we're not afraid of having people voting. We're afraid of people not voting. And the idea that people are you know, deceiving the voting poll and telling them that there's someone that they're not, it's not happening. So anything we can do to increase the number of people who are out there exercising their God-given right to vote that people have died to protect is great. And this bill is making it happen, and hurrah, hurrah.
All right. Well, thank you. And Representative, you want to tell them what happened to your bill?
Well, it was attacked early about the cost, which I want to say one more time, $42,000. That's literally a rounding error in our state budget, in the Secretary of State's budget. But it was attacked because it cost $42,000. Just a side note, you know, the very interesting thing is they passed a voter ID. I voted against it. A voter ID bill out early in the session by Representative Mark Lowry that they suspended the rule so he wouldn't have to file a fiscal impact report. We don't know how much it costs. I know how much it costs because I had one done. It's the same bill that's been filed for the last two sessions. I know that one point is going to be $1 million. One point is going to be $300,000. But we suspended the rules so we didn't have to require a fiscal impact report. So at one time, we come and we pass a bill that we don't know how much it costs, and then we attack a bill that costs $42,000. So what happens is after debate, after discussion, after the Secretary of State came and testified against the bill, Representative Ballinger, the chairman of the committee, he basically said, yeah, I feel more comfortable with it if you sit with the Secretary of State and see if you can work something out, and if you can't, come back and say we can't. If you can, try to. And I'm for working with anybody who's willing to work with me. But I'm pessimistic and somewhat, like I said, embarrassed that we would have a Secretary of State office come and talk about the burden of $42,000 when we're trying to expand voting rights.
Right.
And you're looking at a $6 billion budget.
Yes.
I appreciate, we're getting calls. I didn't even have to tell you which number to call. So those who are interested in calling in, it's 501-433-0088. And if you're a shy person, you can go online to speakupar@gmail.com and post a statement or ask a question. Here we go. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I'm listening to your radio program. I'm from Michigan, and I listen to a lot of NPR when I drive, and your discussion is really interesting. One thing I would like to add, the previous lady that called said it's very important that people vote, but we have to take into consideration that people need to be educated before they vote. How do they know what they're really voting for? Are they just voting based on the commercials they see on TV, which we all know have their own set of problems? But what I would really like to mention is back home in Michigan, where I'm from, there is an organization called the League of Women Voters, LWV. I believe it's a national organization, and they put out a voter's guide. This thing is great, man. I found this thing, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, whatever. I use it every time I go to vote. I'm not sure if your particular area has it. If it doesn't, I would encourage you, the people that are interested in this topic, to coordinate with the League of Women Voters to get a voter's guide for your area. I can describe what it is really quick if you'd like.
We have that organization in the state. They are very active, and yes, they do have that voter's guide, but that's a wonderful resource, so I'm glad you brought it up in case the listeners would like to know more about it.
Yes, and if you could tell the listeners that it's unbiased, they give the candidates each an opportunity to answer, you know, 3 to 5 questions that are relevant to whatever particular election is coming up, and they give each candidate a platform that way to answer these different questions so that the voters can read through and make their choice that way. I find that that's one of the best ways to compare candidates, and that's personally how I make my selections for who I'm going to vote for. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your call.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I know even myself, who am very involved in politics, come to the ballot often not really sure about all the people that are on the list, particularly as you go further down the list and that sort of thing.
It's not just the people, it's also the issues, right?
Yeah,
so there's a whole lack of information about the issues. Now, I wish that we actually could do something similar to what Washington and Oregon do. They literally put together books and mail them to every registered voter.
Uh-huh.
And the books have, again, this is the Secretary of State that does it. So it's unbiased information about the candidates. If you are interested in an issue, you can buy a page for $100 and give both either a pro or a con about a specific legislative or a special ballot issue that's on the ballot. It's amazing. And they literally are bound books that are mailed to every voter.
Wow.
Yeah. How about this? A no-cost option. Why don't we put all this information online so that people can actually go to libraries if they don't have a computer at home, or they can actually access this information as, you know, free and available.
Right.
But a video of the candidates talking about their issues, a document that explains what the issues are. I mean, all that stuff, that's a no-cost option that we can do.
You know, one thing I always think about when it comes to being engaged in political discourse is all the other things people have to do in their lives, their children, their work, all the stress that people are under to figure things out on their own, and how all of this really gets sort of, and rightfully so in a lot of cases because of all the things people have to deal with, it's a challenge, even for those of us who know how to do this. But
I want to switch the subject for 1 second, but I want to take this train off the rails.
You always do.
I know I do. I know. I'm just like, I'm a rabble rouser, and I was born to do it, and I'm proud of it.
Preach.
So anybody here want to attend a constitutional convention? Because apparently we in the state want to do it. And the Senate passed 2 Senate joint resolutions, one that defines marriage as between a man and a woman, or chooses to, or attempts to, or wants to. And the other that defines, that says that a life begins at conception. Now, these issues are fine, and I appreciate that Senator Raybert has a very strong emotional attachment to talking about these issues. But the very idea that we in this country are 3 states away from having a constitutional convention, because there have been joint resolutions passed in 33 states that call for a constitutional convention, And what that means is that we get to 36 states that call for a constitutional convention, then Congress calls a constitutional convention for the effort of amending our Constitution and opening up a document that hasn't been opened up to be rewritten in almost 250 years. Uh-huh. As the president said last night, we're 9 years away from having 250 years of this document. So I'm flabbergasted that we are that close to, I'm scared that we are that close to opening up this document.
Sarah, one thing I'd be curious to get your opinion too, and I think I'll mention as an intro to that, you know, Paul and Ellie, the work that y'all do with education and advocacy, I think that piece is important to keep in mind too, that underlies everything, is without Arkansas Advocates, without KABF, without the community organizations, I mean, that the work y'all do is so vital in education, and we need a lot more of that. But tying that into what you're saying, Sarah, I mean, to me, the ideology and these stereotypes that's promoting this opposition that Charles is running into, I know you're discouraged today, Charles, but I'm sure you'll be back at it tomorrow.
About a couple bills this afternoon.
To me, it's this, I'm going to use the word fringe ideology. It's not representative of who we are as a state or a community. It's when you have, say, 40% of the people vote, and then when you have a district where that district is decided in the primary, so you have 20% of the 40 people are voting, and then of those 20%, you have a majority of that who elect the representative. So you really have a representative who has an ideology that's maybe represented by 9 or 10% of the population, and then when they get down there on the marble, they think they're the everybody agrees with them.
The be-all to end-all.
There's these structural issues that I know Charles is working on, and everybody is, but it's like, man, you know, that's a fringe ideology, a constitutional convention. I mean, that's not mainstream legal thought. That's fringe.
It is, but it's 33 states. Right. That's the thing that scares me. I'm thinking, there's no way we can do something like that. That's just too much. But 33 states. Now, let me just say that if it does, in fact, happen, anything that changes in the Constitution would have to then be approved by 36 states. So it's not like we go in, we change it, and it's done. I mean, there's still another process. And there's a time limit. And we haven't Texas passed legislation in the last couple of days that actually defines how they would choose their attendees to a constitutional convention. Right. We haven't taken that step. Right. So, I mean, there's anyway.
Okay, we need to take just a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes, and you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF.
Shame.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host today. We have Charles Chris Burks, attorney with legal counsel for the Democratic Party, Representative Charles Blake from District 36 in Pulaski County, Sheriff Scandalin with Indivisible of Central Arkansas, and Ellie Wheeler, Senior Policy Analyst for Arkansas Advocates. Ellie, I know you had some questions or comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to, we've been talking a lot about voting, and I wanted to sort of throw out the voting plus one that we talked about at the beginning and see what y'all had to say about what people can do to get involved in addition to voting. Voting is so important, but that's not where democracy ends. There's lots of different ways to get involved in, and I can start that, if anyone else wants to jump in.
Go ahead, Ellie.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, sometimes people forget you can run for office, and I think that, you know, that's one of those things that is really important, and there are local things you can run for and
be the change, right?
That's right. And I don't know if you have anything to say about your decision to run for office or how that was.
So many politicians, public officials, statesmen, whatever they like to be called, are so scared to say what I'm about to say out loud. And it's, I am no different than anyone else. Anybody can and should run for office. We're actually in my district right now. I grew up down the street. I'm a Boys and Girls Club kid. I'm a Central High graduate. There is nothing that separates me from anybody, any one of my constituents. Running for office takes effort and passion. And that's about it. Effort and passion. If you are truly passionate about changing people's lives and changing your community for the better, then running for offices should be always an option.
Yeah, and Charles, just to piggyback off that, and Ellie, that was such a great question, and I think Sarah can probably speak to a lot of the energy that's happening right now, and I think we'll see a lot of that. President Obama had a great quote in his first campaign that I think speaks to this engagement and this choice to run for office or join your neighborhood association or form your neighborhood association, is that one voice can change a room. That's what the Obama campaign put out. So you can have five people in a room, and you can stand up and change everybody's opinions. And those five people can go engage and organize a community. So that room can change the community. That's what the saying went. And that community can then change a state. You can have a community that passes, you know, maybe a good law or a good mm-hmm. policy that change, and that state can change the nation, and the nation can change the world. So that theory of change, people discount it. You know, it sounds kind of hokey. Maybe it's campaign talk or something, but it's so true. It is so true, and it's always just a few people. I mean, just showing up to your neighborhood association. I mean, it's always three or four people who do it. I mean, I'm consistently shocked every time on big things that make a real difference in people's life. Healthcare, you know, minimum wage, Sarah's work. It's always just a few people who do big things. And I'm optimistic long term. I know in the short term we've got a lot of tough policy battles. But in the long term, you know, I think the four of us and you, Paul, and a lot of our listeners, I think we're on the right side of history, and I think we're gonna make some policy wins that'll make a real difference.
So, all right, wait a minute. Again, you can call in 501-433-0088. We'd like to have your voice. Our KABF is the voice of the people, and so we need the people's voices to make our station fulfill its mission. Go ahead, Sarah.
So I was going to say, Paul, you've got me down here as Indivisible Central Arkansas, and I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to help be viable and create. But Terry Root and Jan Baker, two women that have actually taken that under their wings and lifted it up and being, you know, driving Indivisible Central Arkansas. But then there's Indivisible Arkansas, there's Ozark Indivisible, there's Northeast Arkansas Indivisible, there's Pantsuit Nation Arkansas, there's Be the Change Alliance. All of these organizations have actually been kind of birthed. There's no better way to say it than just say they've evolved out of the elections in November to say that, well, we did not expect this to happen. How do we make change? How do we change what's happening? So look around you. My plus one is look around you. Do not get off the couch, get off of Facebook, and start being visible and lets other people see your face as being engaged so that there's no isolationism that's going on and people do not believe that they're the only person that cares about the issues that they care about. The other thing I want to say is, you know, I'm known as a rabble-rouser simply because I do not sit back and let things happen without making people accountable for their actions. And so I was bored. I'm looking for work. I'm looking for a job. And I'm sitting and thinking about what I can do. And I posted on Facebook, I'm going to Tom Cotton's office on Tuesday. Who wants to join me? Because part of the process of engagement is not knowing you have the ability to do it. So I showed up at both Senator Bozeman and Senator Cotton's offices with 14 people who decided they wanted to join me for just an ad hoc meeting with our, you know, senators.
Right.
And from that spawned this thing that we're calling Truthful Tuesdays, where we on Tuesday go to the offices of our federally elected officials and let them know where we stand on the issues. And we being anybody who wants to join, anybody who wants to go. There's no membership, there's no nothing. It's like we're going, there's no training involved, you're going to show up, you're going to do it. The other thing I wanted to mention is Progressive Arkansas Women, which is a organization that's evolved that is not aligned with party, it's aligned on platform pieces that says that that's supporting women to run for office. I mean, not to be sexist and generalist on this, but most of the time men will just jump in and do it because they are geared that way. Women, on the other hand, you have to ask no fewer than 5 times to get to run for office. They always put their families first, they put their jobs first, they put others first before they actually themselves step up and say, I actually can do something.
Uh-huh.
And so we're trying to break those barriers, and we're doing trainings. We're hosting our first training on April 1st at Hendricks College. We're working around trying to encourage people to run for office. We're helping other organizational PACs, you know, structure. And all of this is just because I'm bored and I don't have anything to do.
Well, I'm sure people want to know what your phone number and email is.
You can find me on Facebook.
Do look up Sarah Scanlon on Facebook, though, everybody, because Sarah is really attuned to what's happening right now and really leading that. And
somebody needs to employ me.
Hello, you're on the air.
I was wondering what happened to Dr. Ed. He used to be on his time slot.
Well, this this started about the first Wednesday in January and has been going on ever since. So he ends at 4 o'clock. I think he's from 2 to 4, or maybe even 1 to 4. He does blues and rock and roll. So sorry, we can't sing.
Okay. You're my only station. I just wondered.
All right.
Bless you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Paul, Sarah brought up an interesting thing that I think everybody may have a perspective on, which is the barrier to entry for activism has never been lower because of all the technology that exists now. So everybody should go like Charles Blake's Facebook page right now, and they can get updates from Charles there on Facebook. Everybody should go to Sarah's page right now and see all the great work Sarah's doing. So it's people think, oh, I don't have time for politics, or I don't have time for that, but the barrier to entry is really low. And it's a great organizing tool, too. So all the groups that Sarah's talking about, all this grassroots energy that's out there, it's easy to connect those, to use those tools, and it doesn't take a lot of time. You know, as much time as it takes to go to the 7-Eleven down the corner, you can be on Charles's Facebook page, you can engage with Sarah. These tools exist, and that's one of the reasons earlier when I said I'm so hopeful about long-term is that, you know, democracy is a participatory, you know, sport. I mean,
I don't know what Mark Zuckerberg was thinking when he had told his team or he had his people to create something that's, you know, called Facebook Live, right? That, oh my gosh, this has got to be the scariest thing for an elected official. It really has got to be. That you can go online and start broadcasting a video from your phone at a hearing or at an interview. Hey, Charles, what's going on?
Exactly.
And put it right in your face, and you have no option but to say, yeah. We did a video. We had a meeting for Indivisible Central Arkansas on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock we had 53,000 views on a video that we had done of our meeting where we had three pictures of the elected officials and at a town hall meeting with 400 people that they didn't show up to.
Right.
And 53,000 views from all over the country because of social media is, mm-hmm. you know, we couldn't have gotten that. Right. I ended up on Rachel Maddow because of social media.
Paul, one thing that's so interesting too, I know this has been a great wide-ranging discussion, is the policy change that we all want, the real difference in people's life, for people to have real family income growth. I mean, that's a statistic that just gets me every time, is that in this country, when you account for inflation and wage growth and all that, family income has not grown since 1973. Your average American family has not gotten more take-home money. It hasn't gone up since then. 1973 is when real wage family income peaked. So, I mean, a lot of people are doing well, but that stat gets me every time. And how I'm going to tie that in is to improve that, to get real wage family income up to where people are making more money to provide for their families, to do what they want to do with their lives. It takes all types. You know, you need your Captain Charles Blake out there wearing out the shoe leather. You need Ellie, you know, writing the policy briefs. You need Sarah organizing. There's not a specific type of skill or person it takes to be engaged. You need your forward for the basketball team. You need your point guard. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there for all different types of people, all different skills. You know, sometimes it takes litigation. That's what I do. We've done constitutional lawsuits against the Secretary of State's office. They violated the Arkansas Constitution, the Freedom of Information Act. We ended up having to file an action against them. So that's my piece of it. Charles has his piece. Sarah has yours. Ellie has theirs. But I encourage everybody out there to find theirs, whatever it is. There's a range of things to do.
Right. Absolutely, Chris. And just going back to why it's so important to vote again, what Chris just said is that real wage hadn't went up since, say, 73. And that's affecting all Arkansans. And if you're not voting, then you're not participating, which means your voice isn't heard. And as long as I know it's a vote plus one, but we have to get to the vote first. And to make it, to take half the battle is registering, right? So making sure that we're expanding the registration process so we can get people involved, because it can't be personal. Politics can't be personal if you're not voting, if you're not active, if you're not engaged. And to see real change, we have to be involved. We have to be involved. And it's vote plus one, but voting's first. Voting is always first.
Preach, Charles. Come on. I'm going to bring... I'll bring the box for you to stand on.
There
come on
go.
Now.
Make it a stump, Chris.
I just got a bill to feed today, so I got a lot of opinions. So.
Well, I brought this up with Chris when I invited him to the show, and that is last Sunday, I think, not this last one, but maybe the one before that, there was a article about how gerrymandering, the way we select districts, really is contributing to the divisiveness of the country, because we are dividing them up in ways so that whoever's in power is most likely to maintain that power. And many states do it differently. They get a committee to take a rational approach. But that whole gerrymandering thing, I think, is something that people may not understand or appreciate its impact.
Oh, they're going to hear more about it, because that is the former president's primary call to action. President Obama has created a new organization with Attorney General Holder that is going and talking about that specific thing, right? I think in this state we do the worst job. I think that if we were to actually just do it simply by computerize it, you know, if we did a computerized process of doing the redrawing of their districts, they would look so much different. Even on the federal level, our districts are so gerrymandered, mm-hmm. it's not even funny. I mean, we have a U-shaped, we have a horseshoe-shaped district in the 3rd congressional district. We have the 4th congressional that comes all the way from Oklahoma to Mississippi. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, could you talk about the thing I heard about the medical marijuana, whether you can't smoke or something like that?
Oh, that's great.
It just happened today, I think. Yes, it was.
Well, yeah, there were two things that happened today. Senator Rapert lost one bill.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Someone here. Yeah, just if that's your question, you hang up and you can listen.
Yeah, I just want you to talk about that and give me some information.
All right. All right. Thanks for calling.
I can start this off, and Charles, and you can finish it up and bring it home. But Senator Rapert had two bills. One bill that said you can't smoke medical marijuana. You can vape it. You can do whatever else you want, but smoking it would not be allowed. And the other one, I think, was just a prohibition against it until
slowing it down until the federal government.
Wait, Sarah, I'm confused. Didn't Arkansas voters pass an amendment?
Chris, you're being way too practical.
I thought Arkansas voters, a majority of them, voted for medical marijuana. Are you telling me that didn't happen?
Well, no, it did. It did happen.
It was on the ballot.
It was on the ballot, and I think a majority of voters and both of, I mean, I live in North Little Rock, and so yeah, no, it did pass with a good, you know, 53, 54, 55, whatever, the 60%. I don't know what it passed with, but they did say they wanted medical marijuana. The process by which the delivery of the medical marijuana was something
You're
that was left
right.
up to the design of the committee that's putting it all together, right? So the committee has come down with standards. They don't want it. They don't want edible versions. They don't want, they're being very, you know, very strict on how they're applying it. But Senator Rapert, in all of his glory, who believes mightily in the power of the government and that, but really wants to control it, has an idea that it's states' rights.
Sounds like he really wants to grow it. that's interesting.
Grow it? Whatever. No, I don't think that's it. Well, maybe that's how he plans on raising his $500,000 for his new church. I don't know. But he said it shouldn't be smoked. So you shouldn't light it. You shouldn't light a joint to get pain relief. Well, but you can vape it.
The issue, the real underlying issue with that is that if you smoking it is the affordable way.
It is
of it's the only affordable way of delivery.
Oh, I could put it in a brownie.
If you could, but that means that's a little bit that's
that.
A little effort.
I wouldn't know anything about that. Though. I wouldn't know anything.
But,
about that.
But the oils and the juice and that is going to be extremely expensive.
Yeah.
We're talking $700 to $1,300 an ounce is what the estimate is. And at those prices, you're going to limit the amount of people, and that's what it's all about. Limiting the amount of people who can actually afford it to use it. So
this is not
both
insurance covered.
No. Oh. Both bills were to stop or slow down the process. He failed one, and I'm not sure. I know he get through Senate?
He got one through.
He got through the committee, but Representative Blake, I mean, don't you think this gets back to the fundamental issue of a lot of our policymakers are not connected with your average working person out there? I mean, you know, your district. I mean, do you think the people that voted for this in your district thought, well, I'm going to vote for something that I actually people who qualify for this can't
smoke? That I can't afford. I can't afford. That I can't afford. Well, I can't, and I can't smoke.
And so let's look at this another way, shall we? 60% of the state voted for Donald Trump. 60% of the state voted for medical marijuana. Are you telling me there's no correlation between that? Are you telling me that Republicans did not support this issue?
I'm not telling you that because I know they did.
I know they did too.
Right, and it's the same point. There are conservative, Caucasian, rural voters who are on SNAP. Who need supplemental?
Well,
who make up
honest.
The majority of SNAP? Right. That's what. That's where we have to get. That's the putting a face on it and making it real. And making it reality is that the majority of SNAP are rural white Republican voters.
Let me tell you another one. I got a kid that lives across the street from me who's on disability. I live in North Little Rock in Lakewood. I'm not in like some rural area. I got a kid across the street from me, 19 years old, is on food stamps because he's on disability. He has $80 a month to support himself on food stamps. Now, you're going to tell me that he can't buy Cheetos?
Or his aunt, who may qualify with one of the conditions now, might not be able to smoke because of Senator Rapert thinks he understands the policy better. And I think, you know, this panel has been encouraging because I think we're dispelling these you know, these myths, these, you know,
falsehoods. You can call them falsehoods. Yeah. I like to call them falsehoods.
Exactly.
I like to call them alternative facts.
All right.
Well, I guess I'm not going to get to redistricting and gerrymandering because it's too complicated. But I
real quickly.
I don't think some people know what we're talking about, so we might somebody want
drawing the electoral map to sway in one way or another. That's what gerrymandering is. That it doesn't flow naturally. You're drawing it to get a specific purpose. Now, the thing I wanted to say is that Sarah and Chris did an excellent job during the 2016 election to let you know how important that election was. It was the most important election of our lifetime until 2018. And this is the most, this is not hyperbole, it is the most important election that we could have, because in 2020, we are going to redraw districts based on the census data. And if we don't win, if Democrats, I'm putting on my party hat now, if Democrats or even reasonable Republicans don't win a two or three of the constitutional offices, then we are lost.
Yeah, we got to get two. That majority on the board, because what Charles is talking about is the three constitutional officers draw the districts in Arkansas, and then you can draw districts in a way that certain people win. But I think, you know, just to give a little preview as we wrap up, there's a lot to come from Democrats on this. There's a lot of strategy. This is a big deal. So you're going to see the resistance continue on this. I know Sarah knows this, but there's a lot of planning going on. There's a lot of strategy. It's so important. Please keep that in mind as we move forward.
All right. Well, we're about the end. I know we have lots of thoughts in all these people's head. I see them moving around, leaning forward with an opinion, but they're going to have to, maybe we'll share it after we get off the air. We got to go.
It went by so fast.
Yeah. I want to remind folks that you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. This show is broadcast every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. And next week there will be, I think the public policy panel will be hosting a group who will be talking about education policy. And I want to thank all of my guests, Chris Burks, Charles Blake, Sarah Scanlon, and Ellie Wheeler, all participated and shared their views with us. And thank all the listeners who took the time to call. So go out there and get involved. This is your country. This is your community. This is your state. And you have a responsibility to be heard and to make the difference so that this place will be better for our children and grandchildren. Thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABS.